African rhythms passed down to us through ancient spirits. Feel the spirit, a unifying force. Come on, move with the spirit. Stand up, clap your hands. Move with the rhythms, get down.
From WSNC 90.5 FM, a broadcasting service and NPR affiliate of Winston-Salem State University, welcome to Africa World Now Project. I'm your host and producer, James Polk. Today, IAT and the People's Movement. Africa World Now Project is next. IAT in the Black radical imagination is more than an idea. It is the material representation of Africana freedom. It is the exemplar of the promises, failures, and potentialities of Africana liberation. It is the colonial knot that the Africana world must untie. Just as Haiti represented freedom in the past, it also represents the potentiality of collective freedom today. The question of Haiti is inextricably linked to the global Africana movement against oppression, as fortified by the colonial in all of its forms. I have presented the notion specifically in 2020 that we stand at the precipice of radical change, but this violent system will not go without a fight. This moment will determine where do we go from here. Accordingly, it is essential in this moment where European modernity is fracturing for every critical thinking African and person of African descent globally to grab hold of the fracture and pull with all your might. I assert that it is with Haiti, then and now, along with the Afro communities in Colombia, burgeoning movements across the continent of Africa, Afro-Brazilian communities, Afro and Afro-descendant communities in Europe, critical thinking African descendants here in the United States, along with our historically and ethnically oppressed allies who stand in the long tradition of collective resistance to the dehumanizing nature of racial capitalism to create another future. Maurice Jackson, in his article, Friends of the Negro, Fly With Me, The Path is Open to the Sea, Remembering the Haitian Revolution in the History, Music, and Culture of the African American People, presents a long view of Haiti in the Black radical imagination as the material expression of Africana resistance. Maurice Jackson writes, as early as 1797, Prince Hall, an African American who fought in the war against Great Britain, applauded events in Haiti and reflected on their implications for the United States. In a speech to the Boston African Masonic Lodge, he declared, "My brethren, let us not be cast down under these and many other abuses we at present labor under, for the darkest is before the break of day. Let us remember what a dark day it was with our African brethren 6 years ago in the French West Indies. Nothing but the snap of the whip was heard from morning to evening." 60 years later, and a few years before the first battles of the Civil War in 1857, the Reverend James Theodore Holly, the missionary, immigrationist, and first African-American bishop to the Protestant Episcopal Church, preached that the Haitian Revolution is one of the noblest, grandest, and most justifiable outbursts against tyrannical oppression that is recorded on the pages of the world's history. Continuing to map the role of Haiti in Africana resistance, Jackson goes on to suggest that if Virginia was the seedbed of revolution for whites, it was home to Black revolutionaries such as Gabriel Prosser as well. Prosser lived in Henrico County, Virginia, near Richmond, the capital. A blacksmith by training, he was versed in the revolutionary rhetoric of the period, a rhetoric that encompassed Haiti. But Prosser was not alone. Virginia's governor, James Monroe, observed that occurrences in San Domingo for some years past doubtless did excite some sensation among our slaves. Taking note of IED's interdependent impact on the socio-political conditions in the Africana world, specifically Gabriel Prosser's revolutionary program, Douglas Edgerton has written, Saint Domingue served as an inspiration to Gabriel and completed his development. The distant figure of Toussaint seemed to clarify the domestic situation and told him that if he dared, success might be well within his reach. Stephen Oates agreed with Edgerton and wrote that, though not a single white had died, the Gabriel conspiracy shook Virginians because it seemed incontestable proof that Santo Domingo had been boiling right underneath them. IED was the inspiration for Denmark Vesey, who led his revolt in 1822 near Charleston, South Carolina, who, quote, appeared determined to emulate the violence of Saint Domingue's Black Jacobins, perhaps seeing himself as another Toussaint Louverture. Vesey told several of his revolutionary comrades that, quote, Saint Domingo would ever come over and cut up the white people, end quote. The trial records revealed that his comrades, quote, were cheered with the assurance that assistance from Santo Domingo and Africa were at hand. At the trial of Rolla Bennett, one of Vesey's closest friends and an enslaved African of Governor Thomas Bennett, another black identified as witness number one, swore that Rolla had told him that white men, quote, say that San Domingo and Africa will assist us to get our liberty, if we will only make the first motion. He added that Rolla, quote, said some white men said Congress had set us free, and there are white people here would not let us be so, and Santo Domingo and Africa would come over and cut up the white people, end quote. Witness number seven testified that, quote, Denmark told us we must unite together as the Santo Domingo people did, never to betray one another and to die before we would tell upon one another. He expects the people of Santo Domingo would send some troops to help us. Indeed, the ideas and material reality of freedom represented through this series of resistance filtered through IED is important to contextualize for many reasons. Reasons I will let you determine, but a clear historical consciousness is a prerequisite for addressing the inequities that pass unabated through time and space. Where are we now? Today, Africa World Now Project's Moisa Muntali recently called up with our partners in Port-au-Prince, Haiti, to discuss what is happening on the ground. We look at the people's movements in Haiti with Felina Elise Chartier, member of the new Pop Domi movement in Port-au-Prince, Haiti. This discussion centers the people's movement confronting the current political challenges in Haiti and the role of the United States and other external forces blocking paths towards positive change. Our show was produced today in solidarity with the Native, Indigenous, African, and Afro-descendant communities at Standing Rock, Venezuela, Cooperation Jackson in Jackson, Mississippi, Brazil, the Avalon Village in Detroit, Colombia, Kenya, Palestine, South Africa, Ghana, Haiti, and other places who are fighting for the protection of our land for the benefit of all people. Enjoy the program.
Felina Elise Chartier, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
First of all, if you could give us a little bit of the background in the uprisings that have been taking place in Haiti since really 2018.
In 2018, the Petro-Caribe scandal came to the forefront, and the Petro-Caribe movement was where Petro-Challengers started to ask for government accountability and justice. And the Petro-Caribe scandal was the biggest financial fraud that ever happened in Haiti, where billions of dollars were stolen by the government, by corrupted government officials. And it was spent into very poorly managed projects, or projects that nobody can see. For example, the government said that they had done 25 football stadiums, but most of those football stadiums are nowhere to be found. Or there were projects that started that never ended, like marketplace or hospital, projects that were millions of dollars were spent and paid to people that are close to the government or not, to certain international firms in the Dominican Republic, United States, or Canada, but the projects never happened. So when that big accountability movement started, that's when really the entire country started with the uprising and the protest. because the situation was simply catastrophic. On top of social apartheid, on top of social inequalities and social injustice, we had all of those corrupted politicians stealing our money and being very arrogant about it, doing radio interviews and saying that there will never be justice, and for as long as they are in power, there will never be any prosecutions or any trial on the Petro-Caribe. So after many nonviolent protests, the Court of Auditor published 3 reports. And all of these reports, it was thousands of pages pointing out on crimes. Well, we have the current president, who's the de facto president, and his companies, they were involved in what the Court of Auditor referred to as an embezzlement scheme. So in 2018, there was that big anti-corruption movement, but there was also, like there has always been, a big anti-social injustice movement as well. There was the demands from the people for more equity, more justice.
And your organization, Nous Pas Dormi, has been part of that movement from the beginning.
Yes, Nous Pas Dormi has been part from that movement from the beginning. In the beginning, the movement started on Twitter. And then all the people on Twitter, from the social media, we brought it to the streets, started doing pacific, nonviolent sittings, nonviolent protests. And you know, many people that looked at life with the same lenses and that were fighting and against corruption and impunity, named Petro Challengers. It's a name that the media gave to us. We formed that group, Nous Pas Dormi. So Nous Pas Dormi is a collective of citizens fighting against corruption, impunity, and for social justice in Haiti.
And when we're talking about the Petro-Caribe embezzlement scandal, it was reported by that a number of government officials and businessmen embezzled roughly $2 billion from the Petro-Caribe funds. Is that the final figure that's been reported?
The exact number that the Court of Auditor referred to is $4.3 billion.
$4.3, wow.
Yes.
And so now we fast track, of course, to what's taking place today. I mean, right now, as we speak, the biggest issue has been, apart from the scandals, but it's also been the fact that Jovenel Moïse refused to leave on February 7th this year, February 7th, 2021, which is supposed to be the end of his term. And if you could expand on how the movement has been in challenging or making him accountable on that issue?
Well, the first thing is that the current government is not only illegal, but it is also a very corrupted government. It's a government that's very close to the gangs. It's a government that's very close to the violence and the massacres, many massacres that happened in the country. And this, despite all of the protests that took place, despite all of the reports that were published, no actions in justice was ever taken. And the squandered money, the money that squandered, I fear that we may never see it back. So we are fighting at least to have prosecutions and to have a proper trial and for the current government to be held accountable for all the bads that they have been doing in Haiti. Haiti, like I always say, Haiti doesn't have a corruption problem. Our biggest problem in this country is impunity, because the politicians, they in the corrupted business sector, they know that no matter what crime that they commit, they will get away with it, because we have a justice system that is completely non-existent. So no matter what crime, violence that they get involved to, no matter what public funds that they steal, they know that they will get away with it. And this is our biggest problem. Not only that, the term of the president ended in February of this year, and he is in fact a de facto president who's leading the country towards what's looking and shaping more and more like a dictatorship. But also he is the most corrupt government that ever hold state power in Haiti.
And you can say this is also a continuation of the Martelly administration, the Michel Martelly administration, because they were very close as well.
Yes, it is the same power. We have to understand that it is the same political party, the PHTK. It is the same neo-Duvalierism regime. And the current regime is an inheritance from Michel Martelly. Michel Martelly is the one who introduced Jovenel Moïse to the people. Jovenel Moïse was a nobody. Nobody knew him. Nobody ever heard of him. So he came out of Michel Martelly's hat just to hold on to the place for him and make sure that the Petro-Caribe trial would never happen, or any other trial for say. And what he is trying to do today is proof that he's only trying to continue with the impunity, because he's trying to do a referendum, which is forbidden by our constitution. He's trying to do the referendum to vote a new constitution. And many articles in that new constitution would give him total immunity for even after his term. Justice would never be able to be served, and the judges would never be able to call him and held him accountable for all the bads that he did if that constitution passed on. And their plan is looking more and more that after his term, Michel Martelly would go for another term, and then so on, and then we will never see justice, and we will only see more social inequality and exploitation of the masses.
Yeah, if we could also unpack a little bit more on the referendum, because that the referendum you're talking about is to that he's talking about is the looking at is a proposed June constitutional referendum, right? And if you can expand a bit more on that, what does that mean of him pushing that? And for the ways in which he wants to consolidate power?
Well, the government is illegal. The government is contested by the entire society. There is no honest and trusted organized group that is supporting this government, because everybody know how much they are involved into corruption and into many massacres. So they do not have the credibility to hold a referendum. And we need to remember that Haiti's current constitution, the one that President Jovenel Moïse was sworn on when he was president, that constitution forbids a referendum. And the reason why the constitution forbids a referendum, it's because it's a constitution that Haitians voted after many years of a very tough dictatorship of the Duvalier. And it was a way for the people to avoid for a president to have too much power to bring the country back to a dictatorship. So that referendum is illegal. And the only reason why the government is trying to change the constitution, it's because they want to protect themselves from prosecution for their financial crime. And they want to protect themselves from being held accountable for the different massacres that many human rights groups are referring to as state massacres. And this is what we are seeing today. We're seeing a government that is illegal, a government whose term has ended in February 2021, trying to change the constitution. And the new constitution that they are proposing has many articles that's making it clear that the president, the ministers, and the general director in the public administrations cannot be held accountable for no matter what scandal, what corruption that they did when they were in power. So it is clear to all of us that the reason why they want to change the constitution is because they don't want to pay for the bads that they did.
And some of the details I've heard about the constitution, the proposed constitution that he's pushing, is that they want to eliminate things such as the office of the prime minister, for instance?
Yes, they want to eliminate the office of the prime minister, replace it by a vice president. They want to eliminate the chamber of Senate, the senator to only have one chamber of deputy. So all of the power that the people had through the parliament, that they want to reduce that power a lot, and they want to give more power to the executive, so to the president. They want us to move from a parliament-led regime where the senators and the deputy have more power to one where it is a president regime, presidential regime, where the executive, in say the president, has more power. And one of the very reasons they want to do that is because many times when they're trying to push their personal corrupted agenda, it is the parliament, the few honest, because very few, because a lot of our senators and deputies are as corrupted as the president. But the very few good ones that we had, they were always the one, blocking those corrupt laws or the laws that were only in favor of the regime. So that's why they want to remove all of that power from the parliament.
And again, yes, we're listening to Velina Elise Chalier, who is a member of Nous Pas Dormi, which is also known as We Aren't Sleeping. It's a movement organization based in Port-au-Prince, Haiti. We're looking at the people's movement in Haiti. And expanding on the people's movement, as you're talking about these proposed power grabs by President Jovenel Moïse, how has the movement been in the recent months, particularly since February, especially when we're talking about COVID restrictions and things like that? How has the movement of the people been in pushing for more accountable, just government?
Well, the movement is, we are still very, very present in the streets. In the beginning of the year, there were many very large protests, especially protests to say that we don't want a new constitution. We never took to the streets to ask for a new constitution. We took to the streets to ask for justice and accountability, to ask for impunity to stop. So our movement, we're still very present. We're doing a lot of work getting ready for the government that will happen after Jovenel Moïse, because no matter what is going to happen, we know that Jovenel Moïse will not be in power forever. So we are doing a lot of work, a lot of grassroots work, a lot of lobbying work, so that we can make sure that not only does he leave power as quickly as possible, but also that he faces justice, because it's not only a matter of some country coming with a plane and taking him to bring him there. It is also a matter of him facing justice. And in his, and when I say he, it's not only the de facto president, but it's also his entire regime, his entire government, whoever in that government was involved into corruption or into the state massacres, because many massacres, as like the La Saline massacre, was led to officials and that were directly appointed by the president. So we are doing a lot of work behind the door. We are keeping quiet because there's a lot of insecurity in Haiti. There's a lot of kidnappings happening. And there's been many killings, many assassinations that of prominent people that were clearly against the government agenda. So we are being very careful about what we are doing, but we are very present. And in the recent months, there's been many protests. People have seen many protests, many very large protests, and we are continuing the fight. There is no other way, because Haiti is now an unlivable place. It is a gangster state. So the only chance that we have is to keep on fighting for things to change. We have to be the change that we want to see, and this is what we're doing.
Yeah, I was going to say, when you mentioned that you're not just focusing on this particular president, but also you're looking really at the system that's been in place, particularly that's enabled people like Jovenel Moïse and Michel Martelly to be in power. Is that
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly. We're looking at the system, because the system that we have in Haiti is a system that's in favor of corruption. It is a system that is in favor of impunity, because the justice system is very weak, and the justice system is really under the power of the executive. As a matter of fact, one of the things that that Jovenel Moïse and his team wants to change into the constitution as well is that it has to give even more power to the president in terms of nominating the judges. So the judges would respond to him directly. So it is to weaken the justice system even more. So we are fighting against the system. And when we are talking about the system, we are talking about the system that is producing corruption, impunity, kidnapping, smugglings, you know, gun trafficking. We are talking about the system that is based on social inequalities and injustice. We are talking about the system that is based on exploitation of the masses. So we're talking about the system that is, you know, anti-democracy, because what we have in Haiti is not democracy. We have never seen democracy being given a real chance in Haiti. So this is why we are fighting not only against one person. It's not a personal vendetta against Jovenel Moïse. It is a vendetta against the system. And it's a vendetta for change, for real change, for deep change, so that we can really have a chance at democracy. Because today, the way things are, this is not a democracy that we are seeing in Haiti. It's a government that's very autocrat, and it is a government that's leading us towards dictatorship. So we are fighting against that system.
And part of that system that we see has been this reemergence of security forces. For, you know, in the past, when we had Duvalier was kicked out, and of course Aristide came in, they abolished the military, which was a source for many, many abuses. The military, which was actually designed by the United States, we should get into that later on about the U.S. policy. But I was saying that there seems to be also been a resurgence of that type of system of security forces that was in place during the Duvalier years, the use of the Tantamakuts and the military structure. Is that
yes?
If you can go on.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Saying that, I don't know if you can expand on that as well.
Yes. Yes, definitely. We are seeing that. One of the first things that Jovenel Moïse did when he came back into power was to bring back the military. The military doesn't have a lot of people, but they do have the same practices as when the Duvalier were there. Especially that the head of the military, the very high rank, the highest rank officers were officers during the Duvalier time, and they were people that were accused of crime against humanity. They are the same people that are leading that army now, so we are seeing the same practices. But even worse than that, the PNH, which is the Haitian National Police, the Haitian National Police, that mostly all close to 100% founded by the United States of America, we are seeing the same practices from the policemen. We are seeing many times over the internet, on social media, you would be seeing videos of those police officers attacking and using excessive force on pacific protesters, nonviolent protesters. You would be seeing them using violence on activists that are protesting in the streets, on journalists as well. We have seen in the past those police officers sending directly into journalists trucks tear gas, or using excessive force trying to control one man that was not armed, that had no gun on them. So we are in fact seeing the same practices that they had during the Duvalier time. It is very sad to say, but when you put a gun into a Haitian man and that person becomes a police, they go straight back to those same bad practices. And that police, I always say it, is a police that's mostly for 100%, close to 100%, is founded and trained by the United States, or it is very controlled by the United States of America. And we're seeing all of this bad practicing. Just very recently, we're seeing what's happening in Colombia. And when we know in Haiti that it is a force from Colombia that came to train our police on how to control kidnappers and that kind of stuff, and we're seeing the way the police in Colombia is reacting towards the protesters, then that gives us an idea of what they are training our police on. And our police was already excessively violent towards civils.
And how is the movement, the people reacting to this challenge from the system? How are people being creative in ensuring that they can still speak truth to justice, truth to power?
Well, we're using social media a lot. First thing first is that the people are very engaged. And the change that we have seen since we started with that anti-corruption movement, anti-impunity movement, is that more and more young people are involved into the fight as well. They are getting into the fight. More and more people are getting interested into politics. They are understanding how bad politics can affect their lives. They are understanding how important it is for them to get involved in politics to really change things. And they are using social media a lot. They are using grassroots a lot, doing small meetings, talking a lot about the fight against corruption and the good things that need to happen. So we are seeing a lot of creativity, not only from the young people, but even from the elders. There is that bond that's being created between the young people and the elders, where the elders, especially the ones that lived during the dictatorship of the Duvalier, they are sharing their experience. They are sharing what happened during that time, doing that memory work that we lacked in Haiti. And this is really helping with the fight.
And again, talking to us directly from Haiti, from Port-au-Prince, Haiti, is Velina Elise Chalier. She's a member of Noon Pap Domi, which means we aren't sleeping. And we're looking at the people's movement as it tries to make the government accountable in Haiti. And yeah, so if you could, one of the things I wanted to explore as well, as we talked about, you mentioned how these security forces are being trained by the U.S., the police and everything else like that. There's also seems to be a continuation in the U.S. supporting governments in Haiti, which are not for the people. This was the case, of course, under Duvalier. This was the case, of course, when they supported the coup d'etat against Aristide twice, basically. And if you could expand a bit more, especially now, the government has, the U.S. government has supported this government, the Jovenel Moïse government as well. How much of an impact has that been on the community? How are people reacting to that? Expand on how people are reacting to that support of the United States to this government.
Well, Haiti is, I would say, bad history, for lack of a better way to say it, since English is not my first language. But Haiti's bad history with the United States is since they occupied Haiti in 1915. So from when they occupied Haiti to when they left Haiti pretending that they were giving us back our country, they've never really been out of Haiti's politics, and they've never really been out of dictating Haiti how Haiti needs to live. So as a country, the United States of America, they're only interested into their own interests, you know, and that's normal. Any country would be in a country to defend their own interests. And the interest of the United States is not the interest of the people of Haiti. What are we seeing in Haiti, for example? In the recent years and months, we are seeing a lot of gun violence. We are seeing a lot of gangs. We're seeing a lot of kidnappings. And we're seeing containers and containers of illegal weapons being transported to Haiti from the United States. And we're seeing that even though there is a US embargo on weapons and ammunitions from the US on Haiti. So because of impunity and because the United States, they only look at their own interests. No major gun trafficker has ever been arrested, prosecuted, or punished in Haiti. So who smuggles the guns into our country? This is one good example of where the United States of America, the relationship that they have in, with Haiti, seems like one that only serves their own interests. So they are interested in keeping a corrupted government because they know that Jovenel Moïse is going to give them that vote against Venezuela, for example. But they're not really interested into stopping the guns from coming to Haiti, even though there is an embargo on weapons and ammunition. They are more interested into the corrupted government because they know that they can control the puppet that we have as a de facto president. And this is what they're interested in too. They're interested into selling as many rice as they can to Haiti. They're interested into using Haiti like a backyard so that they can send all of the junks. We need to understand that Haiti is the third biggest buyer of rice from Florida. So this is America's real interest in Haiti. It's a country that they use as their backyard. It's a small country that they use whenever they need a vote against a country like Venezuela, for example. So, and this is not new. It's always been like that. The states has always been very involved into our politics and only to serve their own interests. And I'm not even starting on Haiti's resources. Haiti's mines of gold, of all the other precious metals. So I'm not even starting on that. So whatever they are doing here, they are just protecting their own interests. And this is not new. It has always been the United States of America politics towards Haiti. It has always been a way of doing politics to defend their own interests in the interests of the businessmen that orders a lot from them and the corrupted politicians so that they can control our politics. It has never been a politics that's for the good of the people. That has never been the case.
Yeah, and we can even go way back to when enslaved Africans freed themselves in 1804 when the U.S. blockaded the island. So it starts from way back then.
Exactly. It's way back then, and it has never changed. You know, it's always been a politics where you would even question yourself and say, is it that they are punishing Haiti for the independence? Because it's never been in favor of the people, no matter what they will pretend. But foreign politics of the United States towards Haiti has never been one equality or equity. It's never been on the same standard. It's always been a double standard. And they've always used, you know, gun trafficking or drug or whatever would happen. They've always used that as weapons towards the corrupted politicians. So it is good for them when there is a corrupted politician because they can pull that wild card and say, okay, we know you are trafficking guns. We know you are trafficking drugs or your family lives in our country. We will send your family back. We will cut your visa. You will no longer be able to travel to the States. So they like it when it is the bad politicians, the corrupted politicians, because when it is honest people, they cannot held anything against that person. So they have to speak to that person on a foot of equality, but they like it when they can repress, you know, and this is not new.
And apart from the demonstrations that have been in front of the U.S. Embassy in Port-au-Prince, what else has the People's Movement been doing to put pressure on the U.S. To do better, or to make them more accountable. Even though, of course, we have this long history, but what other measures have been put in effect by the people?
Well, apart from the protests and the sittings and the lobbyings that we are seeing, today in Haiti, we are at a point where the people is really much more interested into what Haitians can do for Haiti than what US can do for Haiti. Because we have came to the point where we have realized that the United States of America, they will never do anything good for Haiti. Punto. You know, then it's not in their interest. So we have reached that point where us, the people, we're more interested into what is it that we Haitians can do for Haiti. Of course, you will be seeing a lot of protests in front of the embassy, but they never act upon those protests. So we don't really bother anymore. We do lobbyings and we tell them this is what we want to do for our country. But the time has came where really it's Haitians that have to look out for Haiti. And it's Haitians that have to force the changes and be the change that they want to see. Because it's not, you know, at the end of the day, it's not the United States job to come and police Haiti. It is our job as Haitians to police ourselves and to police our country and to build the country that we want to see. It is our job to say, this is how we want the foreign policy of Haiti to be. This is how we want to be treated. This is how we want our diplomacy, diplomats to address foreign policy, you know? And this is where we are. We are today seeing more and more young people and us in Mupabdomi, this is what we're saying as well, that what we need as a solution has to be a Haitian solution to the crisis. It cannot be, once again, a US solution to the crisis, because we've seen the result of those already. In 2004, it was a US solution. They came with La Tortue. La Tortue was the prime minister. He did his show, whatever he wanted, and there was no accountability at all. So, and he had no reports, nothing to give to us Haitian people. So, and then what did we see after? We run right back into another cycle of political unrest and political instability. It is because the solution wasn't Haitian. So it is very important that the crisis that we are seeing today, which I always refer to as a societal crisis, not only a simple crisis. It's not a matter of political parties fighting for power. No, it's more deep than that. It's an existential crisis. And it is one that us Haitians, we have to address and find the solution for. Of course, we like and we welcome friends, you know, and friends can always give advice. But a friend shouldn't be the one giving you the solution, because it is our own country and we need to gain that sovereignty back.
And as you said, that this is for the people on the ground, Haitian solutions. I wanted to expand a bit more on how broad the movement is. It's not just within Port-au-Prince, right?
No, it's not just within Port-au-Prince. For anybody who would be watching the news on Haiti, or anybody listening that wasn't watching the news, they can go and Google it, and they will see that protests have been happening in the entire country, in the major cities, in the smaller cities. The Petro-Caribe movement particularly reached the entire country, and it was a movement against corruption, against impunity. Nowadays, that we have the fights against Jovenel Moïse and the referendum that he wants to do, that we're fighting against that. It is the entire country, especially since last week. What we have been seeing is that the electoral council, when they travel to small cities, very, very small parish, when they travel to them and they try to engage with the population on the talk about the referendum, they are kicked out of those cities. They are very badly kicked out of those cities because the people are telling them that we do not want a new constitution. We want you to respect the constitution of 1987. So it is not only a little movement from Port-au-Prince, it is a movement from the entire country, and the entire country is protesting against that system.
And seeing that the situation is such on the ground, as you explained, in the the environment being so hostile against the referendum, how does the government expect to have a referendum in a month? It was supposed to be in June. How do you see it happening at all?
Well, the government that we have today is so corrupted, and they don't fear engaging gangs to do violence and massacres towards their own people. There's a report from Harvard Law School that came out a couple of weeks ago, or not that long ago. And in that report, they are clearly referring to the government using the gangs for what is state massacres. And they are even saying that they can pursue the government's responsibility for crimes against humanity. So when you have that kind of government, because people need to understand that the government that we have in Haiti is a government that is shooting live bullets towards their own people, even when the people are doing very nonviolent protests. It is a government that's killing its citizens. It's a government where we saw Med Dorval, who was a very prominent lawyer in Haiti, being assassinated, being killed in the same neighborhood that the president lives. And we saw afterwards the president going into media, giving an interview, and saying that 2 minutes after Med Dorval was killed, he was informed by his wife of the killing. So this is cases where the government is sending a very clear signal and very clear messages that if we can kill Med Dorval, then we can kill any lawyer that would try to come against us. We can kill anybody that would try to come against us. And it is things that we have seen in the many massacres, the massacre of La Saline, whatever is happening in Bel Air, all the massacres that's been happening in Bel Air, all the massacres that have been happening in the Artibonite. You know, the government is using gangs to control the territory. They're using violence to control the territory. They're using kidnappings to control the territory. So they can do whatever they want. And I want to also inform the people that the ID, the voting card that we have, is a voting card that was illegally contracted and done by the president and his wife. The wife of the president is the one who chose the company that's doing those ID cards. And the president himself, in interview again, and this is facts that I'm giving you, the president himself said that he personally chose the company that's doing the ID cards for voting. And this is the ID card that they will be using. So they don't really need people in the streets to go vote. They have already done their votes. And even the billboards that they have out in the street, they're saying there's going to be a referendum and we are all voting yes. So what's happening in Haiti is things that we have seen in the past already. Duvalier did a referendum to change the constitution so that he could remain in power for life. And then he did a second referendum so that his son could become president at 19 years of age. So what Jovenel Moïse is doing is not something new. This has already happened in Haiti, and just like it has happened in many countries in Africa. So it is a government, like I said, that's using violence to control the territory. So using that same violence, they will do the referendum and they will give whatever answer that they want to give. And this is why it's very important for us, the people, to keep fighting. And this is why when you are giving us the opportunity to send our message out there and let people know this is what is happening in Haiti, it's very important.
No, I was going to also add, as you were saying, this is the same thing that's happened during the Duvalier years and when they had the referendum, which was already planned, I mean, which is the results already known. And it's interesting. Now, in the old days, you had the Tanta Makuts, which were in uniform, so you knew who they were. But now the gangs are acting like the Tanta Makuts, which are not so much in uniform, but they're trying to give the government plausible deniability that they're not connected. I don't know if you can expand on that.
And even there, it's not really plausible because in the recent months, we saw barbecue with an ex-police officer, Jimmy Cherizier, known by the name of Jimmy Cherizier, who was a prominent gang leader. He announced that there was a G9 coalition, so a coalition of gangs, that the gangs were getting together so that they could terrorize the people even more. And then what happened is that a government official, one that was nominated directly by the president, who was part of the commission in charge of disarmament and in charge of reinserting gang members into society, you know, taking gangs, guns away from them. Well, we saw that man on media saying that he is the one who gave the idea to barbecue to do the gang coalition, and he is the one who negotiated with the other gangs for barbecue so that they could reach to that gang coalition. And then later on, we saw a report from Madame Laline saying that since the gang coalition, there's less gun violence, but more kidnappings or some kind of foolishness like this, but some kind of statement that gave even more power and credibility and legitimacy to the gangs. So this is what we're saying. It's not only that they are the new Tonton Macoute, but they are the well-known new Tonton Macoute. And they clearly say it over and over on radio that the guns that they are receiving, they're receiving the guns from the government. They are working for the government. They are hired by the government. So they are not shy about it. You know, they are on media. They have their own media. They are on social media. They are online, and they are clearly saying that they have been hired and they have been given guns by the government.
Now, taking all that into consideration and also looking at the past, how is the movement adapting from the lessons of the past and the current situation, especially when you're talking about security? How is the movement adapting to that so that it can be sustaining?
You know, when you live in Haiti, you make a choice. You make a choice of fighting because you have to fight, or remaining silent. And we, as part of Nupap Domi and the entire people who are engaged in the movement, we made the choice of fighting. Because whether if you protest against what the government is doing or if you remain silent, you are at risk of dying and you are at risk of being kidnapped. You are at risk of being raped or being killed on the side of the road by a lost bullet. Haiti is a country where babies are being killed by guns. This is the country that we are living into. Babies are being crossed into the fire from gangs fighting, and they are being killed. So when you live in a country like this, you kind of make peace with dying because you don't know when you are going to die, and you can die anyway. So we might as well die fighting. And this is the situation today. Of course, it is dangerous. Of course, it is a very tough country to live into. But you make a conscious choice, and then you decide to fight because no matter what you do, you may die anyway, badly. So you might as well fight. And this is what we're doing in the movie.
And before we go, I wanted you to also give to our listeners acts of solidarity. How can people here, ordinary citizens here in the U.S., be in solidarity with ordinary people in Haiti who are fighting for a positive change?
The biggest help that ordinary citizens in the States can do to support Haiti is to call their representative and tell them about what's happening in Haiti and ask them to take a stance against the current government, because the current government is supported by the U.S., they feel like they can do all the bads that they want and they will never be punished for it because there is no justice in Haiti. So they can ask the representative to take a stance against the government, and they can also ask their representative to follow on that rule to protect, the obligation to protect that everybody at the UN has, and then they can act upon crime for humanity, because this is the situation we're seeing in Haiti. And they can also spread the word on social media. There's that hashtag Free Haiti that was trending and that really brought up to the light what's happening in Haiti, so they can inform themselves more and share on social media what is really happening. And, you know, I don't want people to take my word for granted. I think people can research Haiti and they will see what is happening. There's tons of articles, tons of videos, tons of medias like yourself who covered what happened in Haiti. So they can make their own research and then they will see the truth. And then once they see the truth, they can act upon it by calling their representative and asking their representative to take a stance against the government of Jovenel Moïse, against PHTK.
And again, the hashtag was Free Haiti, was it?
Exactly.
Velina Chalier, thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for allowing me to give a voice to the voice.
There was music with drums and everything. And then these cats came through. They called themselves VCUC. They came with a brand new style and a brand new swag. From the woods, y'all. Attack, 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 attack. Attack, 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 attack.
That's it for Africa Boat Now Project for this week. I would like to thank you for joining us today and look forward to spending time with you next week. We can be reached through all your regular social media platforms, email africaworldnowproject@gmail.com, or follow us on Twitter at AFWRLDNWPRJ, or Instagram at Africa World Now Project. I'm your host and producer, James Pope. The Africa World Now Project Collective consists of international media journalist, executive producer, and human rights activist Moise Muntali, Africa World Now Project media correspondent Funa Ngondo, senior research content contributor and production director Dr. Tasneem Siddiqui, senior research content contributor and production associate Dr. Josh Myers, associate producer and content contributor Dr. Keisha Khan Perry, technology advisor is Byron Gray of Grayworks Technologies, and creative director is Judah Pope. Africa World Now Project is heard every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on WSNC 90.5 FM, NPR affiliate and broadcast service of Winston-Salem State University. Programs are archived and available on all podcast platforms. Search Africa World Now Project. Until next week, be safe, be peaceful, and above all, be intelligent.